It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Yo, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to this week's episode of River City 93. This is the off season, so we have a special guest with us, Mr. William Yambi. Real quick, before I introduce Mr. Yambi himself, let's just kind of go through the accolades. He is the forever captain of Richmond Kickers. He is a legend of the Richmond Kickers. His number is so iconic. Anyone that wears number two will be known as William Yambi. He still has his chant sung at games because he's so good. And he probably has the best smile this side of the Mississippi. How are you doing, sir? Did I cover everything? Is that everything?
I think you did it a bit more, I think. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. It's always fantastic to see you guys. And I do miss you guys. I have to admit that.
We miss you too, man. So before we got started, let listeners know, I assumed you were still at ODU working. So I hop on here at like 7:30. I'm like, y'all be forgetting? And then you hit me and you're like, nah, I'm on Central Time. So to let listeners know, what have you been up to since you were the assistant coach at ODU?
Yeah, Old Dominion about a year and a couple months. I moved to a very different place. I moved to Indiana, Evansville, where I wanted to do something a bit different. I did miss youth coaching, and here in Indiana, I'm overseeing a club. I'm a director of academy of a club called FCE United. It's a different sort of challenge. It's not me playing now. It's me all about coaching. And it's also very much different to the East Coast. It's different to Richmond or Virginia Beach, because the level is quite it's a bit behind compared to what I used to. So it's a challenge that I'm really happy to take here, and then still put a smile on my face. So it's a different sort of challenge, but still keep me smiling. That's pretty much where I've been up to. In addition of growing the family as well, so I do have a. I have a 5-year-old now, Noah, and I have another one coming up in December. So I'm quite busy, I would say.
Oh, there you go. Are they following in dad's footsteps? Are they like getting ready to learn the ways of the center back?
Noah is playing soccer. He's five. He does play with our academy here. He actually trained with the 7-year-old. But you know, he's quite young. He enjoys soccer. He wants to be a defender too. Although I'm trying to push him toward being a forward, because I think that's where all the recognitions are. So. but he loved it. He loved it, and I hope the one coming up in December, and I know he's going to be a soccer fan too. I know he's going to be into soccer as well at some point. Yeah. But yeah, so all enjoying the game still.
So we're talking about your life after football, and it's kind of interesting. We get on this. I want to ask you, like, how was the adjustment for you? Because I'm not going to lie, when we get the announcement as Kicker Trans that you retire in the middle of the season, I was like, excuse me, what? Like, he got called Shanier that day, and I was like, bro, did you get this announcement? Shanier was like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, What led to it's rare that you see someone retire mid-season, but what has it been afterwards for you?
It was a tough decision. Of course, you know, stopping playing is and especially halfway through and in the condition where we were at, because you know, we were literally mid-season and we were pretty much, you know, it was David time. David was getting the team going, and that's one of the reasons why it was even more difficult for me to leave, because I knew he kind of needed my help too, for the things that he was about to do. But for me, it just felt like the right time. It felt like the right opportunity, the right time. It wasn't an easy decision. It was a tough decision. It was very difficult. So I went to him and we chatted a bit. I went to David and I said, hey, I think I'm gonna step away. And he told me, no, what? I said, yes. And I explained him why. I said, this is the reason why. You know, the opportunity came in Old Dominion, where I knew that's something that I wanted to do, you know, after playing soccer. I wanted to get into college coaching full time. And the opportunity came in. And you know, things like that happen, and you know, they come and go. So if you don't commit to that, you probably have to go to somebody else.
Yeah.
So you know, that was mid-season, and I told him, hey, I have to do that. And the kick again, that was my alma mater. That was Old Dominion. Mm-hmm. And it's always a place that I wanted to be. I wanted to coach along my coach when I was there, with whom I'm extremely close. So I always wanted to have an opportunity to work with him, because I learned a lot from him when I was a player, and I wanted to do the same thing as a coach. So, you know, with all that and chatting with the wife as well, and figure, you know what, I have to make that decision. And that's pretty much what led to me leaving in literally mid-season, and then starting full-time at ODU by mid-June. It was already in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was never an easy decision. Yeah.
I can imagine not so, but I mean, I know you did put it as one of your top 10 moments. And trust me, it took me a while to find this photo. I had to go scout for it.
You get this picture. Wow.
Yeah, it took me a while. So
wow.
I would ask you about your, not only your time at ODU, but you also went to MLS. Didn't work out for you there, but what was that overall experience of like getting drafted, being from a college player? How was that whole experience for you?
You know, it was to be honest, until I was pretty much called into the combine, to be honest, I didn't know about it. I didn't know there was such things, because I was following the game, but I wasn't following MLS that closely. So I was playing in college without knowing that is how you get there. I just didn't know. So throughout my time at Old Dominion, I had so many injuries. You know, I had ACL, I had meniscus, I had fractures. So this picture, you see, that was 2007, and this is pretty much when I actually had a full season. That was the first time I had a full season at Old Dominion throughout my time, because all my years were ending, you know, 3 games after the season. The other one was 5 games after the season. So this is the only time I actually went full season, and that was my senior year as well. And as you see, I first played with the brace. For the first couple of games, I was using this brace, and then at some point, I tell myself, you know what, that's it. There's no more brace. I threw that thing away, and I just use a sleeve. And I had a sleeve pretty much all the way through the season. But, you know, I just played, and I had no clue. I played without having in mind that, hey, you know, I may have an opportunity to be drafted. I had no idea that was actually existing until the day the combine list came in, and I remember that I was, you know, I was away with some friends playing, just playing a pickup game, and then I think the coach called me. He said, "Hey, have you seen it?" I said, "I asked him. I seen what? I didn't know what he was talking about, because I wasn't following any of that." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Hey, you be at a combine." I was confused. What do you mean? What is the combine? And he said, you know, I was invited to the combine along with my center back partner, Dave Horse. And that's the guy I played with throughout my time in college. Him and I we were literally twins. We knew each other. We knew everybody's move. We knew each other's move in and out in the game. We were we are still very, very good friends. So he was in. And then he told me, yeah, congratulations. I'm in too. And we are both in. And I still had no clue until, you know, suddenly I started getting emails and information about going to Florida and how to book my flight and all those stuff, how to get there and the accommodation. I said, okay, so this is serious. So, you know, made it to the combine as a guy that nobody knew.
Yeah.
That nobody knew about me. But so I just had to play for everything. So I was 3 days. The combine were 3 days in Florida, and the first couple of games I went there, I just played. I had no pressure. The coach who was overseeing our group told me, hey, you know, I like the way you play. I didn't know they were actually following me. So I like the way you play. I just wanted to go have fun and enjoy it. So I went at the combine. I honestly just played. And then the last day of the combine, that's when coaches start, you know, getting in contact with the players that they may want to draft. And then Kansas City, and now the first team was actually the Real Salt Lake who came to me and they said, hey, you know, we would like to draft you. We have a pick at number 11 and we have a pick at number 22. They also say we want to get your partner center back. So they wanted to get the two center back from Old Dominion. And I said, okay, but it was clear that the first one they were going to pick was going to be Dave. I mean, he deserved it because he was two-time conference defender of the year. For Dave, he had to be. I wasn't surprised he wasn't picked even earlier than that. So they picked Dave at 11, and then they had 11 and they had 24, and then when they came to 23 at the combine, Kansas City picked me before them.
Hmm.
So I was prepared to go to Salt Lake. Kansas City picked me before Salt Lake had a chance. So I'm a bit on an unknown situation. I was like, okay, what just happened? So now I get all the accommodation with Kansas City, and we get there. You have to fight for the spot. And it was fun experience. Being young in an environment that I've never been in, knowing that all I wanted to do was just to play. I just wanted to play. Got to Kansas, met some friends, fight for a spot, earn a spot, was as a developmental contract because they had some different contracts back then. You know, they had a senior contract, which was mainly for, you know, the top guns.
Yeah.
And had a developmental contract, which was mostly for all the rookies, most of the rookies. And you know, to add a bit of spice again, I was an international too, so it made even mine tougher because you know each team had about no more than 9 international spots on their squad, so that made my condition even more challenging. But I was up for it. I went there and I enjoyed the experience, and I was signed, and then I was loaned to Real Salt Lake. I wanted to play. I just wanted to play. I wanted to find a way to play, but unfortunately, I had a lot. I had a lot in front of me. Yeah. I had to compete with the U.S. center back then, Jimmy Conrad, who was the starting center back. I had another center back who was also part of the U.S. squad. So it was tough as a rookie. So we get to the point where you know I end up going to Puerto Rico. My agent recommended me to, you know, let's get you in Puerto Rico where we can play. Because Puerto Rico was part of the USL. Now, personally, I didn't know much about, you know, is that a good thing for me or not. But, you know, by then I just trusted my agent and said, okay, if you think it's good for me, then okay, that's what's good for me. So we took the Puerto Rican route. Because financially as well, it was giving me a lot more than what Kansas City was putting me on. I went to Puerto Rico. I played there for a year, and then that's when we had a very good run in CONCACAF. I made some good friends again, and The life was quite fun in Puerto Rico. So we had a fantastic run when we had at the, I believe that year we beat the Galaxy. We beat Santos Laguna. We beat the big guns. So it was fun, and life was good in Puerto Rico. Soccer was good in Puerto Rico, but I personally thought I was drifting away of what I wanted to achieve because I think I was way too comfortable. So then I tried, and I was missing US too. I was missing those who I was a bit close to. So I tried to get back in the US. I tried to find if I could go back into MLS. The door was not, you know, quite open at again after that. So I think after that as well, I was offered to Rochester then, but the fee was too high. Rochester couldn't pay the fee from Puerto Rico, and then it was a bit of a complicated situation because Puerto Rico did not want to release me, but I wanted to get out of Puerto Rico. So the way things work. Puerto Rico told me at some point, they said the only way for us to let you go would be the only club would be Richmond.
What? Oh, Richmond?
No, I think because he had a relationship. You know, Colin Clark was the coach in Puerto Rico, and I think Colin Clark had a relationship with Lee. I mean, he had worked in Richmond as well before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he had that relationship, and then I was in Norfolk then. And he told me, you know what? So I said, okay, if that's the only way for me to get out, I guess I will. I'll get there. And I spoke with Lee, and then Lee got me in. That was in March. I started with the Kickers in March 2009. April 2009. That's when I joined the team. I came to train a bit with them. I signed a contract with them. And then that was it. I think that's when the love story began.
Wow. So I mean, you already talked about your second top five, but that CONCACAF Champions League run that Puerto Rico went on, man, it's one of those things that you never really hear talked about. Like, I didn't know about it until you brought it up and I did more looking into it. What made that run so, I mean, obviously it was a deep run for you, but what made it so special
for us is that, you know, the approach is that we were underdogs. You know, that was the beginning. So we were all underdogs, and all the teams that we had to face, you know, we had to go through a lot of MLS teams. We had to go through, I mean, including the LA Galaxy, we had to go through them. We had to go through the Santos Laguna, which is Mexican. They were Mexican champions then.
Yeah,
we had to go to a team like Independiente, which was the Panama, which was Panama City team as well. We had to go through all those teams, but we were they were all the big guns. They were the club, you know, the club with the biggest fan, the biggest stadium. Our capacity in Puerto Rico was 5,000. But even though we had in our roster, we had a lot of players who were part of the Puerto Rican national team because we were the biggest team in Puerto Rico, even though the Islander was just a small club, but we were the biggest club of the island. And most of the guys were playing for the national team. What made it so much fun for us is that, you know, that sense of underdogs to begin with. So every win that we had that we came out with were a bit sweeter than, you know, the regular season wins, and we were tough to beat. We were playing with everything we had during the CONCACAF. You know, in that every game we are approaching, we say we have nothing to lose. You know, either we come up with an upset or we lose, but at the end of the day, we're gonna try to come up with an upset. That was our approach every single game, and the chemistry was quite well, you know, quite well as well. Maybe a bit too well, off the field. It would be too well. So on the field was good, but it was a bit too much off the field too. But you know, I think that was a big push for them. That's what led us to have such a good run. Yeah, we did that, and we all the way to the semifinals. We were that close to the big day, but it was still the biggest run of the club and of any USL team, really.
So I mean, you already talked about it before, like, you know, your time in Puerto Rico, you haven't had your time in Richmond yet, but the other clubs. So what is your pregame? Did you have a pregame routine? Like, is this something like you had to do?
Oh, definitely. I mean, everybody who was a bit towards who was living by me, they would know that at a certain time of the day, you just don't call me. So I had my pregame routine was this. So I will, I will get up in the morning at first. I mean, those days, some days I will be coaching, you know, with the kickers and coaching and stuff. Someday I will do my coaching. I'll get home probably around, you know, 1 o'clock the latest. If you have a 7 o'clock game, I'll get my pregame meal around 3 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game. After that, I will just sit and watch a couple games on TV, just on the couch. Just watch a couple of games on TV and just don't even think about my game. Just do all the stuff. And then I'll take a nap. I'll definitely take a good hour nap. And then after the nap, I'll get up. I'll take a shower and that'll be game day. Even before leaving the house, I'll be in a game day mode already. So I'll get to the field. I'll drop my stuff. I'll put my headphone on. I will sit on my locker. I'll put my feet up, stay at the thing, and just sing a little bit. That's what I would do. And the guys knew that you wouldn't disturb me when I'm there. I would just stay there with my headphone on, and I would just stare at something and just shake my head. I would do that the whole time. Wow. I'll get up, go and tape when I had to tape, helm and sit again. And I'll wait, and I'll be in a, you know, that'll be rare to get a smile off me 30 minutes before the game. That'll be rare, because I'll be in the zone, and I'll be in a zone all the way from there till the end of the game.
Wow! All right, that's what I gotta ask. What were you listening to? What was the one thing you were listening to?
You probably won't believe me if I say, you know, people would think I would listen to rap, but no, I would listen to country music.
Okay.
I wouldn't listen to, you know, high tempo stuff. No, I would listen to some Garth Brooks, you know, some old country, that's what I would go for. Wow. Something that, I would just stay there and just shake my head a bit, close my eyes, and that's it. And I would listen to that again. Oh, big time.
But never guessed that.
I know.
Yeah, that's dope. So we come up to your third time, man, and you put it as the third most important thing that's happened in your career is winning that league title for Richmond here. Can you just briefly take us through that season and what it meant to win the league title here at Richmond? Like, how cool was that for you?
That was very special because this, you know, that was my first day. My first year with the Kickers, and then and we had such a special group. I joined a group that was there for a while with the great leaders in the group. You know, the Ronnie Pascals, the Daly, the Bulo. I mean, those guys were fantastic. I mean, Dave Bulo was my roommate at first. When I got there, he picked me up. And we were roommate for literally the entire year. So it was a very, very special group. And they welcomed me with both arms. So arms wide open. I got comfortable with the Kickers so quick. That just felt like home from the first months. I felt like, you know what? This is it. This is a great place. This is a great place to live. It's a great place to play. The coaches were fantastic as well. You know, Lee and Jesse and Shirley. But as soon as they met me, they was like, okay, this is a place I would love to play for. These are people I would love enjoy. You know, I will enjoy actually compete for. And that season was. Everything was fantastic. I mean, you put this picture on that. This was us pretty much every day. We were hanging out pretty much every weekend together. When we had a game or not, we will find a way to get somewhere together. And I remember Kelvin Jones was part of the groups as well. So I remember sometime they would drive from where? From Fredericksburg, just to come in for us to just hang out on the weekend. And the daily, we would go on. It was very special. It was very special. In addition of us, almost all of us as well, helping the youth club, because that's when that same year as well, I started coaching for the youth club too. So we were all doing the same thing, enjoying the same thing, meaning in the weekend. So everything that was happening on the field, the chemistry we had on the field, was a big part of the thing that we were doing off the field. We were celebrating for each other. We were not negative. We were demanding of each other, but we were not negative. Ronnie would tell me when I was out of bounds. He would let me know. But I would take it such a great way because of the way he was telling me stuff. Because I was still one of the younger guys. I was still a bumble. I was a new team for me. I was still new. But the way, you know, being a center back and having that responsibility to be able to play that in front of that zone and play almost every game, go ahead.
Oh no, I just want to ask you this question because, like, being a Richmond Kickers fan and someone that came like 2015, 2016, I heard about this 2013 team talked about, like, it's one of the greatest teams in Richmond Kickers. I obviously heard about the 95 U.S. Open Cup team, but this 2013 team is probably the second greatest team out there. You personally, do you think the 2013 Richmond Kickers is the better squad?
I think so because of the mix of the squad was fantastic. I mean, we had a mixture of experience and we had great leaders, and we also had young players who were hungry. You know, another guy that, you know, we had, you know, the group, we had Elson was there. I remember when I joined from Puerto Rico, Elson joined as well the same year, I believe. I mean, we had Sasha. I mean, we had experience and we had youth. But all those experienced players were hungry. They were hungry, very hungry. And, you know, we had, so it was just a good mix. There was no selfishness in the group. There was no selfishness. I mean, it was a lot of mature players who will make all the guys extremely comfortable. I mean, in 2009, toward the end, I felt like I was in Richmond for 10 years. I just felt like it. Just because of all the familiarity that I had, that all those guys gave me throughout the year. You know, we had a coach who was demanding, yeah, very in Lee, and we also had a coach who was very complimentary of Lee, Jesse. He was very much the guy who will, you know, good cop, bad cop. He was the good cop. He was the guy who would come in and say, "Hey, this is it. Let's do that." And that was a great mix on the bench and, you know, from the coaching staff and on the field. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Word, man. Well, I mean, obviously you spent a lot of time here in Richmond. So in that time here in Richmond, you racked up a plethora of awards from USL Team of the Weeks to Defenders of the Year to, you know, everything, man. For you, well, let me ask it this way. Like, how do you view your career in the scope of being one of the greatest center backs in USL history?
Yeah, you know, I also credit that to the players I was with, though. You know, when I had so many good things in all those recognition, 2013, 14. I mean, I also had a great center back with me. I had Henry. I mean, I had a very good center back alongside me. I had a fantastic goalkeeper behind me. I also had a great left back on my side in Sasha, and multiple, you know, great right backs on the other side in Lee, and even before Lee in Luke sometime or I mean,
it was a team effort,
you know, it was a team effort. Now I was putting in some work, you know. I was working a lot to win some ball in the air, but it wasn't just me. I think those guys also make me look better. hungry because I just I was also look I was also in my head I wanted to be able to I wanted to be able to go back to MLS at some point. Yeah. So I was driven a lot by that.
Were you ever shocked when you got notified, like, "Hey, you're on, you won Defender of the Year or USL Best 11"? Like, were you ever shocked, or were you like, "Yeah, I figured"?
No, no, I wasn't because I, you know, I think throughout the year I was consistent throughout the year. So I think not once it did surprise me really. A couple of years it surprised me that I didn't. A couple of years I was surprised by that. I think everybody, even my teammate, were surprised by that a couple of times. But for me, it was, you know, it wasn't just about that. It was for us having a great year, yeah. And for me, getting individual recognition was just a little icing on the cake for me. And the great thing is that all my teammates were delighted by that. But in terms of, you know, I was not surprised because I was on a mission. I was on a mission for my team. I was on a mission for me as well, individually. That's pretty much it. I was just driven.
So last question I have for you is, you mentioned that you played with some amazing teammates, right? You played with Matthew Deli, Burks, Sasha, all over. It's too many to name. For you, I'm gonna put you in the spotlight here. Give me your all-time starting 11 who's played with William Yambi. Who's greatest 11 that's played with William Yambi?
Man. Ooh, put him on the spot right now. 11? Put him on the spot.
He already put himself on the spot when he said 2013 is taking over 95. So you know why I'll go here that and be like.
man, that is wow. Okay. Wow. Okay. Man. Okay. In goal, you know, although all the other guys know how much I know how good they were. Ronnie was fantastic. And then the reason I mentioned Ronnie is because Ronnie was, he was not just a goalkeeper. He was a leader. And he was a positive leader. And he taught me a lot. That's another reason why, because he taught me a lot as well. Playing behind me, he taught me a lot. He put me on the spot when I needed to. He was honest to me throughout the years. And like I said, he wouldn't sugarcoat when he was coming and telling me exactly how he felt. He would tell me, say, "Yombi, that's not good enough." Say, "Okay, fair enough." Not too many people teammates would tell me it's not good enough, but Ronnie will tell me that you clear that ball, it's not good enough. You could have kept it. Or you hit that ball, it's not good enough, Yombi. You're better than that. Okay. So that was a push, and I did respect that from my goalkeeper. And he was, and you know how good he was as well. He was a fantastic shot stopper. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'll go with Ronnie in goal. Okay. My partner center back, I have to go with Henry because Henry and I, we were like, I knew everything Henry would do on the field. I knew when Henry was, when Henry was about to take a yellow card. I knew when Henry was about to play a long ball. I just knew everything Henry was gonna do, because we were not, you know, we were more than teammates. And Henry, I think Henry knew as well everything I was gonna do on the field. And it's, the funny thing is, even the reporters sometimes will call Henry Yombi and call Yombi Henry. that just shows you how similar we were. Yeah, so Henry was definitely, you know, the guy who I would close my eye and play alongside with. That was easy. It was very easy playing with him. On the left side, you know, I have to go with Sasha. Sasha, you know, Sasha had the experience that Sasha had. It was actually making me look quite good as well. You know, because every time I had the ball, I just find Sasha, and Sasha can find a fantastic ball. And again, I wouldn't lose the ball much because Sasha was my way out. When I'm in trouble, I find Sasha, he finds somebody who is somewhere on the field because of his delivery. And Anthony, left back would be Sasha. Right back, Alex Lee. He was, Alex was crazy. Alex had his moment. so, you know, Alex was, he had a high temper. You know, Alex is a player who just had, just don't step on him once. You step on him once, he's going to get a red card. So I don't know how team did not read that too much from the guy. But in terms of Alex on the ball, defensively, commitment, Alex was fantastic.
Okay.
So I'm definitely going to go with Alex Lee. Okay, now let's go in the middle. That's where things become very complicated. So midfielders. That one is the tough one. First, I'm going to put Luke Vercolo on because Luke was a machine. Because Luke was just Luke reminded me of some of the kids that I'm coaching now. They are like energized and they don't stop running. Luke will just keep running. At that point, I will ask the good guy, do you ever stop? I believe that sometimes he was running just more than he had to, but he was just doing that anyway. And you know, he was honest. And he was fair play. He would run the wall for his teammate. He was positive. And he would score some goals as well. So I think Luke was fantastic. Now the other midfielders. Mike too much. I played with Mike Burke 1 year, and that was pretty much 1 year. He was clean. He was very good on the ball, but we just played with 1 year. But you know how good Mike is. He was fantastic soccer player. I just don't know if it's fair for me to put it in because we didn't play that much together. But if I had to, I'm probably going to have to put him in the middle field at some point, somewhere in the middle, because he was very, very good on the ball. They're on a mission was Mike Allan. Mike Allan was a guy on a mission. Mike will just, you know,
he will get
Michael, red cards after red cards. But that was Mike Allan. Just a fighter. Very, very. So I have to put Mike there too. But there are so many good midfielders though. I'm sure I'm leaving some of them, but I want to stay with those who were with the kickers, not the loanees. I don't want to talk about it. I don't bring it too much to the loanees, because the loanees guy, they just come in and go. So they're not very, they're not in a grind with us in every practice. You know, we had so many loanees from DC. They were good players, but I cannot put them into that just because they were not part of the grind on a day-to-day basis, you know, in practice and things like that. So I think I'm definitely going to go with Mike there, Mike Allan, Mike Burke. And then I have to put no man, that's difficult. I can't forget you die Imora too. So you put me on the spot. You put me on the spot. That's too many good midfielders. Udai was brilliant. I played with Udai a little longer, but even that. Hiro was fantastic. 2013-14, the Japanese Hiro was fantastic. You know, you heard of him?
Yes, I think I vaguely remember Hiro.
I mean, and again, if I play with him, we played together for 2 years. And again, he has to be there as well. So if I have to go with the three midfielders right now, a little bit. I will go with Mike Allan. I will go with Hiro. I will have to go with him because he was probably the best midfielder I've ever played with. Because of his what he could see on the field, the things he could do on the ball. I mean, he was mature. He had his career was fantastic. He played everywhere in the world. He played the Portuguese league. I mean, what Hiro will do, it was just left foot, right foot. So he had to be one of them. So. Going back to the midfielders again, I'm definitely going to have to put Luke. I have to put Hiro. I have to add Mike in there. I'll keep those three. And I'll put Yuda just right there. Yuda is there. He's there close. I have to. Yuda is there as well. Those are pretty much the midfielders. I'm probably forgetting somebody who's not going to be happy with me, but those will be the ones. Now, if I move to the wing, oh man, then in my head again, a midfielder just popped up in my head there, boom, 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 boom. Because right now, I have to talk about Stanley. Because Stanley has to be part of it too. So it's just impossible to go with three. It's impossible. But if I go with four, I'm going to have a team of 15 players instead of 11. I also think 15 should be fair for me. 15 should be fair because you can't perform your spot for 11. I think 15 players should be fair. I should be able to go with 15.
But we'll give you 15.
So in the midfielder then, I'll give you the midfielder. I'm gonna go with Luke Vercolon. I'll go with those five in a midfielder. I won't think too much again. I'm gonna stick with those five. Up top, I mean, again, up front, the white guys. You know, you have. I have to give you two per position. I'm sorry. I want to give you one on white, but I have to give you two. Because there's one guy who played one season, 2013. He was there in that. No, 2000. 10 and 11, he was there in those seasons. Edson Elcock. Edson was fantastic. Edson was very, very, he was very good, extremely good 1v1 player. But his career ended a bit early, but he was just quality. So Edson has to be there. Of course, George, David DeFord has to be there, or he was that good. Let's go with forward. Forward is quite easy. I mean, we had two legends forwards that you know, we had two fantastic legends actually. Yeah, because I'm gonna put the eyes on the other side, on the right side. But on this forward, I'm probably gonna go with Dele and Bülow. I mean, those were the legends I played with. Those were fantastic, tough to defend, really competitive guys. So I'll put those two guys up at two forwards. And then I have to put Jason Yeisley. I love Jason so much because I play against him and I got to play with him. And his honesty was just, man, very, very, very honest. Sometimes I thought he was just way too honest. But that was just him. But humble, very good on the ball, hard worker. I pretty much picked up the guys that play more than just a season with me. I think that's fair to go with that. I think with the guys who play just for one season, that just make the list a bit too long. They were fantastic players, but if you play for one season, it's not really fair to compare with those who play for longer than that. Because Ombi was fantastic. Just to get some, you know, just some more, throwing some other names there. Heinz was good. Heinz was fantastic. A hard header, a talker, but fantastic as well. I think we had a very, 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 very good roster. I gave you too many players, but
nah. I mean, that sounds like a legendary squad to me, right, Shanir? That sounds like a legendary squad, man. And Yami, man, I'm not gonna lie, man. It's been a pleasure being able to do this podcast with you, man. It's always great to be able to talk to like past legends and stuff like that, just because of, you know, a lot of stuff that happened prior to 2017 kind of gets lost, right? And I think the reason why me and Shanir kind of created this podcast is because we wanted to not only talk about the team as the current, but also bring back the past and let fans know, like, hey, this team's been around for 30 years, and we're going to try to cover all 30 years of history. And it starts with legendary players as yourself. Like, I still refer to you to other fans as like the captain. Like he is still the forever captain to me because you were the captain when we were the Crucial Kickers and how legendary you were then, man. You're still legendary now. And I don't know if you still follow the team now, but just real quick, like from what you see out there, like from the defense in years since you've left.
Yeah.
Has any player kind of stood out to you?
The reason it's a bit different now compared to what it was then is that you know, we do have the team is bringing in some good defenders, but I think for us it meant a little bit more than it meant to the new guys because the
commitment
again, I may not be on the field, but sometimes when I watch the game, I think the commitment is not quite the same. I mean, we will run to the wall and put our body in line to stop any sort of attack for the opposition. We will do everything we can, but and again, it may take time for them to understand, you know, what it means to be a Richmond Kickers. I think there's something that this generation of players don't understand. For us, it was just more than a team. It was, you don't play for you. You play for your teammates. You play for the fans. You play for the Red Army. I mean, that's something that those kids, it's going to take them some time to understand that. And for me, when I was playing, for me, that was a big motivation for me. When I went on that field, I knew, okay, I had a mission here. I have to make sure that I play for my team. I want those kids who are in the stand watching me, I want them to learn something today. And of course, I want the Red Army to finish the game with a big smile on their face. That was me. That was my motivation.
Yeah.
And that was the motivation of almost all my teammates as well. But now it's a bit different. Now the boys who are coming out are not, and again, maybe they are, but it's not what I see. Because it takes me sometimes, there are days where I go on YouTube and I just watch some games. I watch my games, I watch the new games, and I sort of watch the body language. You know, what do they do? It's a bit different. It's different. And again, it's probably going to take them some time to build what we used to have.
All right. Well, Yami, man, I just want to say thank you for taking the time on your busy day. I know we got our times mixed up, but it was all worth it at the end of the day, man.
I just wanted
to say, it's been a pleasure being to talk to you about your career, the impact you have on the Kickers, the impact you're continuing to have post Kickers and everything like that, man. So for myself, Shanair, it's been a pleasure talking to you again. I feel like I'm saying that a lot, but it's just this being in the presence of one of the greatest Richmond Kickers of all time. And listeners, we just want to say thank you for taking the time out of your day for listening to our show, because without you, we couldn't do this. So with that being said, for Yambi, for Shanair, and myself, we will holler at you guys next time. Be safe and be easy.